I think that's part of it, is like in poetry you can kind of allow these slippages to happen and define the whole process and the project itself.
I mean, talk about world building. I mean, it's through and through what's going on here. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Ruth Stone House podcast. I'm Bianca Stone, and I'm joined today by the illustrious poet and Ruth Stone House employee of the month, Ben Pease. And today we're talking with the poet and writer and an awesome guy, Ed Steck. And thank you so much for being here, Ed.
Well, thank you for having me.
Ben, would you read Ed's bio for us?
Yeah. So Ed Steck is the author of An Interface for a Fractal Landscape, The Garden, Synthetic Environment for Analysis and Simulation, The Rose with Adam Marnie, Sleep as Information, The Fountain is a Water Feature, Far Rainbow, Door Graphic Data Recovery, A Time Stream in Spaces, the cultic parody of time-induced capital, and the necro-luminescence of pink mist. His work has been exhibited nationally and internationally, most recently at the Los Angeles Museum of Contemporary Art. I feel like that's such a Bianca title, necro-luminescence of pink mist. I feel like you're down with that.
I'm so down with that. I'm like, I'm jealous of that. I want that.
You can have it.
Can we share it?
Yeah.
Okay. I could even take half of it. I'd be happy with half. So today we're going to be talking about Ed's really cool new book, The Whole World Building Reader.
It's not come out yet, right? You're going to have it come out with like an Arts Press or something.
Yeah, it's going to come out.
Okay, we're not talking about that.
I don't know when
directly.
We can talk about it. I don't know when it's going to come out, but it's coming out from F Books magazine. Pretty cool kind of artist collective. Well, not necessarily. It's more of like a publishing. I don't even know how to describe it, honestly. It's like it's done by this artist, Adam Marnie. He published, I think, 12 issues of the magazine F that had, writing, visual art, kind of also like projects and, art auctions too, that benefited various causes and foundations and institutions. And also he does readings and performances under FTV. I did a reading through FTV not too long ago. So
that's really cool. I mean, it really fits your kind of, I'm new to your work, so looking through what you assembled here, which is a sort of instruction manual slash philosophy slash kind of, there's so much poetry in it, and visually it's really beautiful. So just like the blending of all these different areas into whatever you need to do to explore these concepts kind of get thrown in together, and it just works really well.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think that the whatever, whatever I need to do to, could you say that again? Because I felt like that was like pretty spot on.
It's like, well, whatever tools I have at my disposal to like explore these concepts, I, one wants to use them. Why not?
Right. Yeah, might as well.
Well, I could tell you why not, because then it's hard to explain it in podcast interviews. And to put it in bios. But I, you're a poet. And I think what I just love immediately about seeing this hybrid work is that you clearly come at things with the mentality of a poet, even things like gaming. So tell us a little bit about how you came into poetry and or even world building gaming. Is that simultaneous?
No, not at all. Not at all. Growing up, I was really into gaming. Board games, video games, computer games, role-playing games. I you know, me and my friends would have LAN parties, you know, which local access network parties. So we would bring, you know, all of our, you know, computer monitors and towers and speakers and everything, take them apart and take them to a basement and play games for together on like a local access network.
Damn.
And we would play for like, you know, the entire weekend. and, you know, I it was a very important part of my life and still is. So it was one of the ways that I kind of was able to experience other worlds almost like firsthand.
It's different than like reading a fantasy series, right?
Very
active.
Yeah, I mean, you're also like building the world through storytelling, and your decisions kind of craft that world. And we always like when growing up, and even now, I come at it like pretty with a kind of a loose mindset in which, you know, I let chance and the decisions and, you know, mistakes kind of guide where these things are going.
I love that.
Yeah.
So going with mistakes is so essential.
Yeah, you know, I often tell when I'm teaching, I often tell students like just embrace failure, embrace that mistake, embrace that error, because that's when like the most human of things kind of comes out of the process.
Yeah.
And that actually, you know, I mean, you know, I don't really, it's a little bit difficult for me to kind of connect the, although I'm trying to, obviously, in like the world building reader, connect this kind of, you know, role-playing game style with poetry. But I think that that's, you know, I think that's part of it is like in poetry, you can kind of allow these slippages to happen and define the whole process and the project itself and, you know, chance and all kinds of just little bits that you wouldn't expect to be, I guess, as important, allow them to kind of flow into it and kind of define where things are going. I didn't really get into writing. And well, I mean, that's not totally true. I when I was younger, I wrote a lot. I wrote just kind of like, I owe debt. I wrote it's like fantasy stuff and short stories. And my whole thing was like, I wanted to like write for video games. I didn't even know like you could do that. So I just, you know, it was more of just like journaling in my room and stuff. And, you know, write things with my friends about like wrestling or whatever. So like it was like a lot of things like that. So
God, you and Ben are so similar. So funny. It's so cool. Weird.
Yeah, I can see that. but I didn't, you know, writing really, like writing, especially writing poetry, I don't think I really kind of got into until my undergraduate year, especially probably my junior, senior year. I can't really remember. I took a class with this great teacher, Jeff Oakes. He's a poet, and it was a class about notebooking. And so I was like, I needed like a credit, and I wanted to, I mean, I was an English literature student, right? But like, I was my major. So, but you know, I liked writing and I wanted to kind of explore it, and this was a writing credit, and I took the class, and it really changed my like whole my whole kind of approach to the world around me. So I saw, you know, if there are, I mean, now that we're talking about this, I can kind of see the links with the world building stuff.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I was able to kind of like process the world around me in different ways than I was used to. And it was very slow, and it was, you know, very kind of like deliberate thinking. And kind of isolating too. So, you know, I'd isolate different parts of the world around me and write about it. And I was specifically going through a pretty rough time with like mental health, and my father had died and disappeared and all kinds of weird stuff. So I used it therapeutically, and it was like a really kind of like therapeutic process. And it started to just be what I did. And I kept doing it. And, you know, after I graduated, I just really, I worked in like a book warehouse and just kind of like read and wrote on my own and did readings, and that kind of just established what I was doing. It happened very kind of organically and like kind of by chance in a way. And I had a lot of support from people, like friends and poets. And then I thought, hey, I'm going to go to apply to graduate school in this because it seems to be working out pretty well.
Where did you end up going to grad school?
I went to Bard.
You went to Bard. Awesome.
Yeah. So it was a great experience. It was an interdisciplinary program. And I went there from 2008 to 2011, I think, was when I was finished.
And the cat's like, feed me.
Yeah, I know. My cat's about to wake up, I think. Yeah. It's screaming.
like, oh no.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to have to wait.
My thesis project or whatever was my first book, so The Garden. And I just kind of, and that was like 10 years ago now almost, so I just continued on, I guess.
Well, you know, you're so great because you're sort of figured out what you completely followed what felt right to you, like that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of pushback actually from some folks with what I was doing. But I just,
Teachers in school or like.
Yeah, not all of them. Definitely not all of them, but yeah.
That means you're doing something right. I mean, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, that's
whenever you're like forging your own way, you're always going to get a little bit of pushback. Right. Keeps you real, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Not too much pushback, because it's just enough to like make you a warrior, and then you just then you push everybody out of the way.
Yes, exactly.
I want to hear some poems though. Read me a poem.
Oh, okay. What let me see, what should I read?
Ben, do you have a suggestion?
Oh, I'll read why don't I read parts of the Myco Mountaineer, which was just published on the
you see that link you got it, Bianca?
I think it's in the email.
So this is part of a larger piece that I'm working on, which is
Asphalt Magazine.
It's Asphalt Magazine, super cool new magazine. This piece that I'm working on is, oh my god, I'm gonna find it. Sorry, is kind of in like the same I kind of see the garden and an interface for fractal landscape and this piece kind of sharing a same kind of world and kind of universe of this like simulated nature and kind of like second nature is kind of what I tend to call it.
Second nature.
Yeah.
I like that.
Thank you. I'm a spelunking, trekking, foraging veteran Myco Mountaineer, equipped with all-terrain positioned outer textiles, skin-wrapping body warmers, O-hiking tools and gear, a fine hat. I'm embarking on a mycelial mountain range, a trek rare for a human being. Connection to the mycelial network before ascent is essential for cerebral mycelial balance. I ingest 6 mushroom extracts daily, agaricon, lion's mane, reishi, turkey tail, cordyceps, chaga, as well as 0.4 grams of psilocybin in a cold-pressed algorithm-free MCT oil sacred living water blend tincture. In higher altitudes, a 20-strain blend mycelial boostal injection is necessary for proper ascent. With 28 hectoseasons under my ascent belt, heroic solo terrain scales become hailed dares. I climbed the renowned Trellis Trio Peaks, scaled the north face of the Yeti Fold freehand, encountered the legendary infrared mystics on the crimson heights of Mount Stamets. Yet I dampened with sweat thinking of this trek into the inner chambers of the inescapable scrapes, paths, cliffs, crags, illusory modes of sprawl, mirages of core paths undeniably present even in recorded argumentative data, reports of unknown soil breathing inhabitants, slippages in time stream stability, shambling pseudo primates, weather anomaly discrepancy, otherworldly entity sightings, and those inverted skies over the looming shadowy misty mycelial mountains. Inverted skies so lucid standing upright is enough to drown in one's own delirium. Mountains are quite confusing. Do not get lost if you would like to return. Have you heard the one about the Cronus slug mass ingestion causing time to ripple mountaineer gut health back to the primordial state? Or how about the one where mountain mimesis effects were so strong that infinite generations of Myco mountains disoriented trekkers into a recursive state of ascent? Or the one about the atmosphere static, the cerebral cortex lichen occupations, the extracted doorways to the Minus caverns, arc trails to the inner mycelial pathways, discarnate entities, forest doorways, dimensions shamble limitless in the Myco mountains. unknown enough to crack your mind open like a subordinate cosmos spill. You must have a map if you wish to travel these mountains, a map with a set agenda, real-time arranged traits, interlocking key. The map is used as a grounding tool, not a navigational tool, to remind the wary traveled mind that one is still, even in the most theoretical and unbound sense, tethered to a physical world, a world to put one's foot down on. Your map must indicate natural landmarks, hiking trails, tunnels, waterways, waterfalls, docks, ports, herb sites, cliffs, edges, animal sites, entity sites, campgrounds, vortexes, eternal doorways, brush, fish sites of disappearances, elevation, notable rocks, notable borders, stones, tactile and ethereal convergence points, invisible sites, invisible points of entry, mushroom patches, rings of bioluminescent mountain mushrooms, small doorways found in trees and stones, sites for meditation, sites for sleeping, sites for astral projection, anti-time convergence points, wormholes, daffodils, improvised shelters, utility sites, mining sites of memory, holes, sites of thinning time, unseen stones. Navigation must be determined strictly through cerebral trails linked by manufactured direction only, and simply through the natural remembrance of selected sites. Organically generated linkages will start to plot points of interest along the accumulating path. One unit to a second unit to a third unit. Each time a completed cycle of three appears, one of the units in the cycle is paired to a similar signifying unit of another cycle, either as A equals A or A equals B, often represented as AB, AB. A frog to a pathway to a stone-shaped log, a mountain stream to a bog to a lost canteen, an unseen thing to a far off timber to a rock. These patterns will guide me on my travels. I'm gonna stop there because it does get a little bit long, there's a part that it's real short that I haven't put it in anything, so it hasn't appeared anywhere yet, so I thought I'll just read it. It's going to kind of repeat throughout a section of the project here. Mountainside platform view, ether, wood, or water, mushroom floats in water, a wild cunning horseradish ripples glacial vernal pool.
Gorgeous. I mean, talk about world building. I mean, it's through and through what's going on here. And there's this the saturation of lists. I love that feeling of we're really piling a lot into this world right away. It's like overwhelming, yet it's completely orienting. It's very grounding.
Yeah. I think grounding is definitely right on, because, especially in world building too, it's like about know, you're populating the world with objects, right? And I kind of also see it like unfolding in a way that's, you know, if you, when you play like a video game or something like Skyrim, where like the world is like totally kind of, you know, in front of you, but as you start to go into the borders, like further and further and further, just like unfolds in this like procedurally generated manner. And so that's what I, you know, I, a lot of ways in world building, I try to make it kind of almost seem like it's like just kind of appearing out of nowhere. And for this section, like it, you know, going back to, you know, world building and role playing games is so much to me about like inventory and where you can put things and where you can place them and how those objects function in a world and especially on a landscape. So, I mean, I think that, you know, I think definitely through this conversation that I'm actually realizing how much world building and role playing games have played a part in my my writing process.
It's all actually new to me. I didn't grow up with that at all. But Ben has been just my instructor in all this. But it really, Ben, talk a little bit about what you're seeing in this poem, because I feel like it reminded me a lot of the things you read to me or talked to me about with when you're telling the story in like a D&D game or.
Well, what's interesting with this piece, you can't, you know, we don't see it as you're reading it, but I see a split in this opening poem where we have the opening being this sort of mountaineer speaker who's of this world. And he's, you know, like in a video game when you have the character selection where you're like crafting your character and their skills and stuff like that. You know, we have, and I'm thinking too about some of the stuff you have in the whole, the world building. I want to talk about some of the other kind of aspects of the world building. And I feel like this one is using like the archive of reference materials a little bit to establish, you know, like we see both this mountaineer is like, like the credibility in terms of like mushroom knowledge is just like off the charts, you know.
That's so true.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I'm really into mushrooms. Yeah, so I, you know, read about mushrooms. I take them as supplements, and I'm interested in them. I, you know, I really like that you brought that up, because I was at my wife Amy's parents' house, and my brother-in-law, who's doesn't, you know, read much poetry, but he read that, and he's like, I can see you in this piece. And that was like a really kind of important moment for me, because like I feel like I'm not necessarily very present in a lot of my work to, you know, most readers or most people, but like I felt that was pretty cool. And yeah, I mean, there is a lot of mushroom knowledge in there, and also a lot of it came out of I used to work at a health food store, an organic food store, and a lot of that stuff is coming from that experience too.
So like, this muffin was made with all organic, sustainably sourced wheat plucked off the mountains tops of Northern California. You know, like other, just like the descriptions like are really big part of the food.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like I've really taken to that kind of construction, that language construction especially.
That's funny.
When I was initially reading the world building part, you have the one of the other items is this idea of the source of abstraction. Mm-hmm. Right. And I have, even though I can see where you were, you know, yourself is in this character, I feel like you've also like abstracted it to a strong degree.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like the source of abstraction, this is I put that in, that's in the world building reader, and I, you know, it's also in that part of that poem, Myco Mountaineer. I mean, it really comes down to, you know, research and like, you know, I don't know how to say this.
Can I have a follow-up question?
Yeah, go ahead.
How do you decide how much to abstract something? You know, how do you, as part of the creative process, you know,
I don't know. I think, you know, when it comes to that's difficult.
That's like a really hard question.
Yeah.
It's a really intriguing question.
I'm curious because I'm just, you know.
Yeah. I think that I have a plan, right? When I sit down to write, I have a plan. I have notes of where I want that piece to go. You know, I do have like an end goal when I sit down. It's not so meticulously planned that I can't like, you know, experiment, obviously, but like I want certain things to be in there. And those things kind of come from, you know, my experiences, my personal experiences, my perspectives, my values even. Excuse me. But, you know, I think that really it's a lot of the times, especially with like even just, you know, world building and role playing games, it is, you know, dealing with things that you've experienced and trying to make sense of them. And I think that especially with the works like The Garden and Interface and At the Mountains of the Microverse, I think that a lot of it really has to do with, you know, coming to kind of terms about our, how we interact with one another. And there's always this kind of search for something that's, you know, unobtainable, really, in these pieces, or there's like always like a journey, and there's one individual usually going on that journey and not finding it. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I said this earlier in the conversation where I started writing as a therapeutic practice. My dad disappeared and then died. And so I don't think is it really important for people to know that? Probably not. But I also think that it's definitely what drives me to write in a lot of ways. And I think that it's also a process that has, you know, accumulated and grown so much that the source of the abstraction in this piece is just like almost totally gone, you know? Mm. And I think that's also part of the therapeutic process, is just letting it go. Mm. And I think that like largely, you know, I'm not writing purely as like, you know, therapy or anything, but it's definitely in there. And I think that it's, if you read the work in a certain way, it's kind of evident there. One time someone told me that there was always an ailment to my writing, and I was like, okay, yeah, I accept that. There's some kind of ailment there, right? Yeah. But I just it's hard to tell when to figure out like when that source of abstraction becomes abstracted enough. I think that's probably a key moment in like the individual writing experience, or, you know, like the point when you're writing a poem and it becomes something else, and it becomes a different way to kind of see the world and see, or even revisit like a site of memory or something, right? Mm-hmm. It just becomes like you're redefining it. And yeah. Sometimes you have to redefine it over and over and over again, mm-hmm. until it becomes like where you want it to be. And you know, I also, you know, read a lot of science fiction, not so much anymore, but I kind of grew up on science fiction, and I feel like that's also what, you know, science fiction is about too, is just kind of like rewriting and revisiting these ideas and different ways of thinking and kind of subverting and distorting the world around us. So
it's so important in working through those kinds of things, because if you stay in reality, it's so limiting in how much you can explore. So I love that. I mean, it makes a lot of sense that like fantasy would be a perfect place to work through some things that are hard to look directly at. Like maybe you're not even capable of looking directly at them. And you know, it's funny because I would think, at first I thought world building, I immediately think of like fiction, because I know fiction writers, they have to build so much more than a poet would in terms of characters. But what I realized in just reading how you talk about it, and then also what I've sort of been learning about with Ben, it really is like the poetry similarly is so interested in abstraction. It's so interested in like figuring out a way to get the reader to accept unreality,
right,
in a different world that is created in the poem, out of time even, mm-hmm. Although it still deals with time. And then I loved when you talked about in the opening of this unpublished book that someday we'll all be reading, the relic of reality. So that like you always have that kernel, like as you were just talking about this, I'm not like bringing this up the first time, but like I just love that term, relic of reality, and that that's really all you need, you know, to get to the truth. You really only need a small relic of reality, and then you need the opportunity to create and fantasize and follow your mind, right? So you're just like following your mind, which is all the poetry is, because poetry deals entirely with truth, and yet it's outside of reality more than fiction. So I mean, that just says it all.
Yeah, 100%. I really like that, this, you know, reality of truth, because it's so I feel like truth is like the strangest thing. It's so uncanny when you actually kind of are met with like a 100% concrete truth. It's one of the surrealist moments that you can like ever possibly experience. And oh my god, yeah. So I think that, I don't know where I'm going with this, but. Well,
I was going to say, after the, I'm calling it the jump, just where there's that image, and the first image we see, to me that jump is, there's suddenly we're away from the speaker and we're getting these questions asked. And those well, it actually reminded me when I first started doing carpentry work and I didn't really know anything about it. And they would say these things to me that, you know, hey, you know, you got to use the six nails there. I had no idea what that meant. It wasn't even the length of the nail or anything.
Right.
The same way of like, have you heard the one about the chronos slug, mass ingestion? Like it's true in this world, and we're hearing it like, I haven't heard about that, you know? And it's like, it's disorienting while it's also creating what this world is like.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's, that was kind of putting the questions in was a little bit of a big move for me, which seems kind of bizarre, but I never had really put that kind of language or proposing that kind of, you know, into a piece like that. And what I realize is that once there's a question proposed, there's consequences to it, and that you have to kind of look at what's in the subject, you know, material to kind of understand where, you know, where this world can take those possibilities and those consequences. And, you know, I think, you know, also that part, I kind of want to have some fun there too. I want to play a little bit, you know, there's some playful questions there, even though, you know, they do seem a little bit, you know, like having like, you know, the gut health and your ascent is like recursive and stuff like that. But I think that's also, if you're so far away from home at some point and you're like out like truly out there, you start to just notice things differently from different perspectives, and you start to question why these things are happening and what they are. And a lot of times your mind turns that around over and over again until it just becomes 100% unrecognizable. Mm-hmm. And I think I've experienced that. I mean, I've, you know, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you could have written this, Ed. I don't think you could have written this poem without experiencing
that. Well, one of the other things I liked about the questions is it implied a community.
Yeah,
so it was there's the mountaineer that we've met earlier, but it gives a sense that, you know, there's others who have gone on similar journeys who have like, hey, you've heard about this one, right? You know, yeah. Like they're more experienced than the first mountaineer is, so yeah. Like even when you're traveling, you're not alone.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's great, because the in the piece, the Myco Mountaineer goes through and discovers this log that, you know, like a ledger journal that these three friends put together, and it's about, you know, their experiences and at the mountains of the Mycoverse. So there are like references to other journeys throughout the piece, and you know, they're like, really what I want to do with this is kind of put together like number of forms that I'm interested in. So like, you know, concrete poetry, like I'm gonna put some compositions in there. Like there's like a mountain song book that the Myco Mountaineer finds, and you know, also work with the kind of technical language that goes behind something like, you know, mountain climbing and geography, and you know, and so much of that is in like materials, like hiking gear, like all kinds of things, like specifics, which I just kind of love to put those details into the pieces, because you know, where this came out of is I was reading these kind of manuals and just seeing how the language is used, and you know, going back to this kind of like disorienting kind of experience of, you know, reading some new language or having some kind of new kind of revelation experience, uncanny moment, a sublime moment or something. You can definitely have that just being totally, immersed into like a language set that you don't know, that is like totally written, outside of your, recognized lexicon.
Yeah,
I definitely, like, one thing that came out, like, you know, I'm reading like technical manuals for like aircraft and stuff like that. I worked at a weird job, and my job was to scan all these like kind of technical manuals and guides. And I kind of just got really interested in how the language was constructed. And I feel like that's, even how it was laid out on the page, I was like, this is so weird. This is so bizarre. And so I just kind of have really gotten into it, and it's stuck, and it's like morphing along. And I think it's really cool when you have like, you know, research materials and research practices that you put into your writing that then start to morph along with the writing process, and just changes all the time.
People take note that this is like a really important, it could be a really important element to your writing practice if you're feeling stuck or whatnot, like finding things outside of your own genre to really get absorbed in, and then obsessed with it in a way, and bringing that language back into your own work is it's so refreshing, because what I've found, like, I do manuscript consults, and I've just been teaching for so many years and reading people's poems. So like, people, and I do it too, like, we write the same stuff over and over and over again and use the exact same language, right? So we have like these, I mean, some people's manuscripts, I'm like, there's 10 words that's it, you know, and the rest is just sort of filler. But you could pluck a book off of a shelf randomly and really pull a lot of like new vocabulary and language out of it that would just, it just opens up the poem in such a different way. Even if it, right? So they're kind of seemingly disparate things. So like, I think of John Ashbery's sort of instruction manual stuff, or like his like art writing, which takes on a different tone. It's not that different from poetry, but still, like, he would bring that into his poetry just naturally, because his own curiosity with other kinds of stuff like coming in, and it just adds such another layer to everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like like 100% adding new layers, right? And that's to me also this kind of, you know, process of abstraction. Like, even when you're just like in this kind of, you know, research mode, or if you're exploring new forms, or if you reading other people's work and then kind of thinking about, oh, how can my writing communicate with this writing, right? How can it be in conversation with this? Do I want it to be in conversation with this? You know, if you have the once you like start to build all of this and accumulate all of it, you know, you can kind of like pack it in, right? And sculpt around it and just see what is left and see what you want to remove. And then sometimes even the removed material is like, you know, something that you want to work into. I don't even know if this makes sense for what I'm talking about, but there's like this essay, like Junk Space by Rem Koolhaas.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, and it's just like, I'm probably not even talking about this properly, but it's like it's listing all this stuff and stuff and stuff and having it there and just like being kind of, you know, kind of cognizant of what these materials and what they are and how they interact with, you know, things that may not necessarily, you know, be made to interact with one another. So
right.
But
that's where the electricity happens.
Yeah.
One thing I got
these disparate objects collide.
Well, one thing I got a sense of from the world building that I see in your work as well is it's a kind of a D&D dungeon master thing where like you almost over prepare. You prepare for like contingencies or things that might happen. Yeah. But you all, I mean, in the world building reader, you talk about cutting a lot of stuff as well. And one thing I feel like I don't hear people talk a lot about in poetry is this kind of idea of like the system design.
Mm, okay.
And I feel like that's just, to me, that was an important part of the whole thing. And I see it happening in your work is that you, after you have this like abundance of information, you like created a system of logic for it that might not be like immediately recognizable. I'll let you, if you want to say more how you've done that.
I think that it's, you know, I think this goes back to the kind of source of abstraction thing, because I feel like a lot of times when I'm sitting down to write, and especially if I have like a larger project that I'm working on that I want to like be something, and I'm just, you know, I'm not just like sitting there writing and just to write, you know, I struggle with form and genre and getting it into the form that I want it to be in. I kind of get obsessed with it, like just obsess over it. I work on projects like a long time, like years and years. I get to be like a perfectionist about the form. And so I want to look, like what I want to do is look at what, number one, what I'm writing about, what the material is. So if we're going to look at, you know, like the garden, let's say, I plotted it out in a way that it looked like, you know, here's like a garden bed, here's a garden bed, here's a garden bed. It was very martial, right? It has like a very strict kind of like organized rhythm to it. And then between those parts, I can't remember how many parts, I think three or four, but between the parts were these little pathways. Mm. And so I really wanted it to kind of look like that, right? I wanted it to kind of have that, you know, have that kind of like garden layout, but at the same time, representing the material that I was actually writing about, which was like, you know, the garden of warfare and simulated landscapes and, you know, how warfare changes landscapes and how it can kind of like affect the relationships of, you know, the people that are kind of stuck into it. And just kind of having them kind of submitted into it. And I mean, a lot of it is about just kind of like being dominated by that form and having like, you know, so, and then for an interface for Fractal Landscape, I wanted to kind of design it in a way that it could look like, in some ways, like a manual with, you know, reference material, kind of like, you know, logs of these like archival units that are, you know, web crawlers kind of like, you know, collecting everything. Because I was, you know, I wrote that when I was in library school. So, you know, I'm really kind of informed by that kind of stuff too. So I think, like so much of this kind of like, you know, system design or logic is so much based on like classification and cataloging. And and it's also working against that too, because I can kind of get to this point where it's so structured, so classified and so organized that it becomes impenetrable. And sometimes that's the point, but a lot of the times, you know, I you know, I want this, want these worlds to be breathable. And I think that's right. What, you know, my ultimate goal is.
Yeah. It's not like language, or what is that? Like, it's not language poetry. What's that?
Oh, like concrete poetry?
Is it concrete poetry?
Which one?
You have people like, you know, like reading instruction manuals like on stage and stuff like,
oh yeah,
what's that guy's name that whatever, who cares, fuck yeah. Him right. Well, like, no, but like you've got a lot of intentionality and imagination behind your work, so you want people to be with you in it, you know, in the world, not left out of it. That would, right, it's like the opposite.
Well, which I think what's that?
Well, I mean, it's something to think about, but.
Yeah, I think I wanted to be a conceptual poet, but I was not.
Conceptual poetry, that's right. That's the word I was looking for. I know, it seems like you're teetering.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, some of it reminds me of Dante, where I remember in one of the notes or in the books, they're like, yeah, he structured the whole Divine Comedy as a cathedral.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, I loved Divine Comedy. I took a whole class on it in English literature.
And I wish I'd taken a class.
Yeah, well, it's awesome. I mean, you can get like an annotated book, and it's
I know, but cool. I always like have like a brilliant Dante scholar like give you like a long class in it. I'd be like, oh, I'd be so happy.
Yes.
Sorry, go on.
No, I mean, I like that, you know, the cathedral thing, because I was, when I was doing the garden, I was really into, I can't remember his name. With the Memory Palace guy. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
I can't remember his name. So I try to map it out in my mind too. Mm-hmm. So like, so much of it is about mapping as well, and like making sure that I have the kind of space structured in my head. And in terms of poetry, like, you know, there's so much math in poetry, right? Like, I mean, think about like, you know, sonnets and I don't know, can't even think of
that's it. That's where the math ends.
Sonnets, that's the
pento, you know, they're, yeah.
I mean, well, it's the coolness of math. It's the math that nobody talks about. It's like spontaneity of numbers and beats and like,
well, rhyme scheme,
silence between kind of notes.
Them, you know.
And what's the villanelle? Is that the and what's the one with the
Sistina?
Sistina, yeah, Sistina. So like, you know, I think that that's, you know, there's all kinds of like kind of like layouts and forms and measurements in poetry. I just kind of took it a little literally.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you're doing so many beautiful things with language and with form on the page, and you certainly have visual artist mentality too in your construction of poems.
I see. Yeah, I think that comes out of probably the Bards program that it was so interdisciplinary. I never thought of myself until the first book, kind of. I was, you know, I was really interested in sculpture. I think that I really got kind of in tune with how things kind of work together, and how they can be, you know, construction can vary so much. My stepdad, he does like, he makes like sculptures on their property. So I sometimes help out with him, and it's cool to see that, because like, you know, it's real, oh my God, here we go. Real rural.
Rural.
Yeah. So it's cool to see that kind of juxtaposition there. And
Well, I'm wondering if you can, do you have like a short poem you could read us, or a piece of this poem that just to sing us out here?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
Even from the stuff you shared from the fractal landscape, interface from the fractal landscape, some of that maybe.
Oh yeah, I can read that. Yeah, this, interface for a fractal landscape. That's like, I guess my latest thing. I just have to find it, because I don't have a Word anymore on my computer, so I just have to Google it.
That's the one you sent us there.
Like, pay up, and you're like, no.
Yeah.
Right.
So no. Well, I pieced together like two versions of Microsoft Word, but I think they figured it out because I can't use it anymore. All right, so this is from an interface for Fractal Landscape. I see my body shape forming torso, neck, leg, foot, arm, hand, digits, arm, hand, digits. I see the induction of my body on the fractal landscape. I see my body moving, hovering lightly across a world forming through my perception from oblique tonal shifts to startling ebbs of clarity. Nature unfolds in procedurally generated polygonal assemblages. Collective nature meshes, growing low grass, high grass, solitary stone, rock formations, elevations, hills, abrasions in the terrain, conifer trees, water sources, birds, flowers, mushrooms, mounds, streams, fish, depressions, and atmosphere, slithers of clouds. As I see my body move across the terrain of the outmoded server, an archive ledger for the landscape operation appear on a translucent tactile command screen floating in front of me. An error occurs. Navigational processes and outmoded server slip into other forms of mobility. Walking becomes skating, becomes running, becomes sneaking until the border lags the coded movement. I see my body lagging. I see my legs bending, pulsing frantically at the points of articulation. In the appendage pulses, I see the landscape below shift in and out of recognizable terrain patterns. Nice.
That's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for talking with us, Ed.
Oh yeah, thanks for having me. It's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm really excited to definitely get you to teach a class on poetry and world building at Bridgestone House.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
It's gonna happen and I'm gonna take it.
Yes, let's do it.
Yeah, I'm totally excited.
Awesome.
All right. Have a great night.
Yeah.